Good morning. I'm going to make this presentation on behalf of Edward Evans. So it's assessing the intensity of market competition in the U.S. papaya import market. Okay, so global papaya imports reached about 261,000 metric tons in 2011, and the import value was estimated at about $250 million. The U.S. is the main papaya importer. In 2011, it accounted for 54% of the total trade, and U.S. imports were valued at about 80 million. The U.S. fresh papaya import market might be characterized as oligopolistic, where Mexico, Belize, and Brazil are the main suppliers. Mexico plays a dominant role. However, a larger market share per se doesn't imply market power. So that's a quick overview of the U.S. imports of papaya. We can see that imports have grown by 40% from 102,000 metric tons in 2003 to about 142,000 metric tons in 2012. Imports value has grown also from 60 million in 2003 to about 86 million in 2012. So as we can see, Mexico is the dominant supplier. It accounts for more than 70% of the total market share. Next is Belize with about 19%, and we have Brazil with about 3%. There are two main papaya cultivars imported in the U.S. market. We have Marador, which is by far the dominant cultivar imported, and it is grown in Mexico, Belize, Guatemala, and the Dominican Republic. The second type in importance is Solo, or also known as Hawaiian papaya, and that is grown in Brazil and in the Dominican Republic. Okay, so I'm going to introduce some of the factors driving the U.S. fresh papaya consumption. The first one is the increasing supply from main producers and exporters. So in the last few years, especially Mexico, Belize, and Brazil have increased tremendously its production. And of course, they tend to send those to international markets. Also, rising interest in functional foods, rising consumer interest in functional foods. Papaya has a higher content of antioxidants, and that helps to promote a healthy cardiovascular system, and also helps to prevent cancer. And finally, we have seen a noticeable increase in ethnic populations, especially Hispanic and Asian, which have some familiarity with the fruit. Okay, so why is this important? U.S. papaya supply is expected to increase in the short term. The University of Florida will plan to release in the future some papaya cultivars that are tolerant to the PRSV, which is the papaya ring spot virus, which is the main limiting factor to produce there. Not just in the U.S., it's a worldwide problem. Therefore, understanding of the level of competition that exists in the market is important, as success for the new papaya cultivars will depend on the extent to which U.S. growers can compete in the market. So, having that in mind, the primary objective of this study is to assess the intensity of competition in the U.S. papaya market. And a secondary objective is to fill the gap that currently exists in the literature with respect to studies investigating the competitiveness of tropical fruits in international markets. So, as we know, in a perfectly competitive market, no single firm can influence the price of a product. But in reality, large firms are active participants in international agricultural markets. So despite its popularity, the perfect competition model has limited use to analyze agricultural trade and trade policies. A larger market share does not necessarily imply a firm has market power. So in antitrust cases, it's common to measure as a measure of market power to see the market share of the company, however, or the firm. However, that might not be adequate, as the firm might face an elastic demand curve. Historically, the Lerner Index has served as an indicator of market power. So the index is defined as price minus marginal cost over price. And it basically measures the ability of a firm to price above its marginal cost. In empirical applications, a calculation of the Lerner Index is not a simple task because marginal costs are not usually known. And traditionally, in those type of studies, a full oligopoly model is specified, but data about competitors may not be available. So therefore, the new empirical industrial organization researchers have come with some alternative methods to estimate market power without using the marginal cost data. One of these methods, it's a Goldberg and Netter, and they propose the inverse residual demand function to measure market power in international markets. And basically, price is a function of the quantity, and we are interested in eta, which measures the market power an exporter has in that destination market. Also, it's function of ZM, which are demand shifters in the export destination market, and WN, which are cost shifter for the end competitors in that destination. So in our empirical application, we use three equations, one for each exporter, Mexico, Brazil, and the U.S. So in each equation, we have two countries acting as competitors against one exporter. So I'm going quickly to explain the Mexican equation. So we have Mexican export price in the destination market currency, in this case, U.S. dollars. We have a Mexican export quantity. We have as a demand shifter, we have per capita disposable income, and for the cost shifters for the competitors, we have exchange rate and producer price index. And in this case, Belize and Brazil are the two main competitors for Mexico. And our data came from several sources, like Foreign Agricultural Service for import prices and quantities. Income and consumer price index were taken from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics. We had exchange rate from the Economic Research Service, and producer prices from Brazil and Mexico for the country's statistical agency. We used the Spencer and Berg test, simultaneity test, because we estimated each equation separately. We didn't use a simultaneous system. And because of autocorrelation, we use the generalized linear and estimation Cochrane output iterative method. So the table shows the results for the empirical estimation, and the inverse residual demand elasticity for Mexico has the expected sign. It is negative. However, it is not statistically different from zero. So basically, it implies that Mexico has not market power in the U.S. fresh papaya market. Regarding other variables, we see that the income variable has the right sign, and it's significant. So we can see that papaya is not a basic necessity as food or as grains or meat. Also the R-square, that model captures about 90% of the variation in export prices. For the Belize equation, it's also negative, the inverse residual demand, but it is not statistically different from zero. Brazilian exchange rates, they play a role in Belize price exports to the U.S. market. We can see at the 5% level, and income is also significant. This model captures about 67% of the variation. And finally, for Brazil, the inverse residual demand is positive, but it's not statistically different from zero. And the producer price index for Mexico, it is significant at the 1% level. It just means that increases in producer price index from Mexico are going to have an effect in the export price for Brazil. So the conclusions, we have the empirical estimates indicate that over the sample period, Mexico, Belize, and Brazil did not price their exports above the marginal cost, so they didn't exercise market power in the U.S. fresh papaya market. However, it doesn't mean that during certain months they have been unable to price their exports above marginal costs, although that's a topic for future research. The U.S. papaya market is very competitive and is driven mainly by price competition and to a lesser extent by quality, by cultivar and quality characteristics. So in this case, Brazilian papaya, the solo type, is considered of be a superior quality compared to Maradol. Solo type papayas are usually sweeter and they command a higher price on the market. Results also suggest that Florida growers may do reasonably well in the market as long as they can compete on a price basis. And as I mentioned before, the solo type papayas are of better quality, but there was not evidence that this particular cultivar had a competitive advantage on the U.S. market. And finally, because of its dominant position in as the largest fresh papaya importer, opportunity exists for the U.S. to exercise market power in the form of oligopsony. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Yeah, we have about 2 minutes for any questions.
Yes, the question is if I include U.S. Domestic production. U.S. domestic production is very, very minimal, so that's the reason we didn't use. So the effect is negligible. Yeah, well, it finally goes to the specific cultivar. I mean, the university plans to release both the solo type, which is has a higher price and it's very valued in the New York market, and Maradol papayas, I think they have a higher yield, but the market price is lower. So.
Yeah, and I could also add to that. I think what you're saying is that to the extent that we can probably exploit some of this, you know, buy local and carbon footprint and all of those things, yes, we can be able to probably promote on that basis. Right.
My question was, do you have any idea where within the United States the major demand for papaya would come from? Where do you think it is? Where Hispanic and Asian population is concentrated?
Yes, that's basically the main outlets are New York, Texas, and in the east, the West Coast, California, yes.
Okay, thank you.